So you're telling me you're just like, oh, fuck it. You know what? I'm just going to go and risk the shit and just go and just do
it. Yeah, yeah. And we got chased. Whoa. We got chased one night. We were riding on the side of the highway because there's some good spots, some good little highway wall parts that were real visible. So we were bombing that. And there was a police car that rolled by and made a U-turn. And so we had to just take off. We were running full speed, and then there was a drop. And I remember miscalculating my steps.
What?
And fell pretty much chest first. Luckily, I didn't hit my face, but I took a bad fall. Like,
yeah, you would have been winded, right?
I was winded, and I took a bad fall. I fell right on my chest. And I remember Lou was like, "You all right?" Killer Keller podcast.
KillerKellerOfficial.com. You need the Kellervision app. 24/7 mini documentaries, podcasts, live shows, DJ live streams, top fives, subscription packages, plus products for all your podcasts and street culture sports. Download it from the App Store for free today.
Instagram UK Frontline.
Beatbox created.
Killer Keller.
And we're here to talk about world music and street culture.
Killer Keller Podcast.
Killer Keller Podcast, live and direct, most definite effect. You know what time it is, people. It's that Thursday flex. Big shout to graffitikings.co.uk and everybody that's got the Kellervision app. You know how we're rolling out here. Strictly for the hardcore sporting art business. Free download, iPhone, Android. We have a very special guest. As you can tell, we are zooming it. We're booming with the zooming. To say this guy was an influence growing up, and to a lot of other people, not just me, is an understatement. The Crooklyn Dodger, the original, Slaughterhouse Inc., Juice Crew. Oh, hold tight. It's Master Ace inside the place. How are you, gent?
What's going on? What's happening?
Yeah, I'm good. I'm better now, brother. I'm better now.
All right.
How's it over there? All right?
Yeah, it's good. It's raining today, but it's good.
It's good. It's good. Whereabouts are you in the world, brother?
I'm in New Jersey. I moved out of the boroughs of New York City about 2006. Right. So I left Brooklyn and moved to what we would call the suburbs, just away from all the hustle and bustle. And it's been a good move for me. But I'm really just a hop skip from Brooklyn. Like I can be in Brooklyn in 45 minutes.
Oh, I mean, I wish I was in Brooklyn within 45 minutes, I'll tell you that much.
Yeah.
Well, listen, there's a reason why we connected. And it's something that I kind of brought up. I've kind of been massaging the idea since I connected with you, because I know that you have a hidden history and depth and understanding of graffiti. And when I bring it up with people, to be fair, people are like, how did you know that? And I'm like, yeah, no, I just knew it from back in the day. And I can't remember where it was that I read it. We all know you as the versatile MC, the freestyle MC, the legacy that back to back from before I was even into hip hop. But the lineage of most artists that come from that background is they also do other disciplines. And yours was very much of a time being graffiti, right?
Yeah. My second album, Slaughterhouse, there's actually a photograph of me doing graph on a wall. That was just one of the inserts. If you open up the artwork, that's one of the inserts. It's a picture of me writing. And so I think from that photo, I probably did an interview with The Source or one of those magazines about that. And they used that same picture in the magazine. So that's kind of where people became aware that I was connected to graph. But, you know, the story goes quite a bit. It starts quite a bit before that, 93.
I love that it starts a little bit before that. We're going to get deep into this. I had the Slaughterhouse inlay card of the tape.
Mm-hmm.
That thing unraveled my world, man. And I do remember that you were the can by the wall. I remember that significantly now you come to mention it.
Yeah, yeah. That picture was right in the cassette. You fold it out.
Yeah. Any kind of backstory to that? Was that just a regular day for you, or was it just like, oh, actually, I'm out painting?
That was the day we were doing photos for the album for Slaughterhouse, and so I wanted to, in some way, communicate that I was into graph as well. And so, our photographer that was there taking the photos that day, I brought cans with me. I'm like, yo, I'm gonna do this little quick A right here on the wall and just take pictures. And so I just did a quick throw up an A or whatever, letter A, and he captured one of the photos. There's more photos than that, but that's the one that we used.
Wow. Let's take it back. Let's go. You mentioned it from way back. Like, where did it all begin for you? Was this in the same timeline as you picking up a mic?
A little before, to be honest. A little after, because I was in high school already. And so it was 80, I want to say it was 81 or 82. The documentary called Style Wars came out.
Right.
May have even been 83. I was definitely in high school though. And so I saw that documentary and it had a crazy impact on me because for my whole entire life, I saw Graf. It was on trains. I rode to school on trains. I saw it on the trains. Wherever I went, I saw Graf. But I never thought about it on the level of, oh, these are actual dudes that are in a crew, that have a name, that they, you know, this is what they do full time. And I just became intrigued with the idea of, you know, young guys around New York City putting their names up everywhere. And so I was probably in my second year or third year of high school. And all of a sudden from that one documentary, every time I rode the train, I started reading all the names. Now I could understand the writing. And so what I would do is I had a notebook that I carried. And every time I rode the train, I would take the notebook out and I would write any new names I saw, whether it was inside the train or on the outside. And I had a list of must have been 200 names. I just wanted to document the different names that I saw from different writers. And that's how the passion began. And then when I, it was one of those summers where I was home from, I mean, where I was in high school. And I decided to figure out if I could get my hands on some paint and to see if I could, you know, try it, you know.
Right. And
so that was the beginnings for me. I really started out with just markers in the building where I lived and in the projects. I would write in the elevator and in the hallway walls and stuff like that. And
what projects was this? What projects were you in?
Howard Houses in Brooklyn, New York, and Brownsville.
Right.
And you know, I was just doing little tags at first with markers. And, you know, just trying to figure out what my hand was going to look like and what my letters were going to be. I fooled around with a few different names. My first graph name was Klein, C-L-E-I-N.
Sick. All right.
I don't know why I picked that name. To this day, I don't remember the reason I picked that name. But I do remember that my uncle was kind of like trying to snitch on me to my mom's, telling her that he thinks I'm writing on the walls and stuff. And she asked me about it. I said, no, that's not me. And he's like, he's the only one around here that will be writing Klein. Something made him suspicious that it was me doing it. I don't know what it was. Maybe he saw the same thing written on a notebook or something, but there was something that got him suspicious about it. But in any event, I started on my journey and I wanted to try my first piece. And I remember going out to try my first piece at a train tunnel in East New York, Brooklyn.
Oh, shit. Okay.
Yeah.
Talk to me about that. Before we start actually going into that, I love the fact that you had a book that you had written down the names. That was like that almost became your A to Z, because like you were saying, that to define the words, you know, you had to learn this was of a time where you had to learn how it's read, isn't it?
Right. And guys were using all kinds of different wild styles and stuff like that. And so part of the challenge was being able to read certain pieces and understand what it said and what it meant and what the little, you know, letters, the little written letters that were written inside the letters of the crew names, all of that stuff. So I just started writing down every name I could come up, you know, that I could see on a train or on a wall, just to kind of see which ones I was seeing more than others. And so there were a few that really just stood out to me that I would see all the time. And so you know, I obviously started to develop respect for the names that I saw the most.
In the recesses of your mind, this could actually be pretty hard to go that far back, because, you know, you're in your local area, you're in Brooklyn, and right. What are the names that you're picking up, like, as a youngster? What names are really sticking out to you at the time around the area?
Well, in my particular neighborhood, mm-hmm. there was only a couple of guys that I saw their names all the time. But on the train, that was where more names were more prominent from the train rides. So there was a guy that wrote Cost, COST, mm-hmm. Cope 2, which is a super famous graph bomber. But at the time, I was still learning. So I thought his 2 was a Z. So I was calling him Copez. So on my...
Yeah, you're not the only one, bro.
Yeah. So on my list of names, I had Copez as one of the people. I found out, I learned later on, you know, that was Cope 2.
Yeah.
But man, there was so many. Is the Wiz was one that I always saw.
When you say always saw, because, you know, these are folklore kind of names, and
yeah.
But you literally saw them; they were everywhere.
I saw their names everywhere. Like, wow. There's certain ones that just stood out to me, because it's like you could go wherever you went, you saw a throw up, yeah. You know, an IZ throw up somewhere. It was just always somewhere. Same thing with Cope. Cope was everywhere. Course. Man, there's so many names, yo. Oh man, what's my guy's name? There's a few dudes, man. I'm
from the Style Wars era.
From that era, absolutely.
Like Scheme.
I never saw. I only knew of Scheme from the movie, from the documentary. Yeah. I don't know if I ever saw an actual Scheme piece.
Min One? Min?
Definitely saw Min, and that was one of the names that was on my list.
Sick.
It was a dude that wrote Oz, O-Z. But in my neighborhood, there were three very big graph artists. They were big as far as the city-wide, but they were from Brownsville, from my neighborhood.
Right.
And one was R.E. Yep. R.E. was... I swear R.E. was almost on every train, on every car. He had a throw up on every car.
So
R.E. Bust, B-U-S-T, mm-hmm. was everywhere. He would write bust, and he would piece bust, but then he would tag B.T. And B.T.'s was all over the trains in those days.
Wow.
He had a brother. His brother wrote B.I.E. Bye. He was a young kid, younger than me, and he was going to the train yards. I was older than him, but I had the kind of supervision where I couldn't just be out at 1 a.m. running through train yards. So
yeah. He
would travel with his brother. And then the other guy from my neighborhood that was up everywhere, was piecing, all of that, was Cito, C-I-T-O. Their crew was called M.O.G., Masters of Graffiti. And they were a Brownsville, Brooklyn graph crew.
Wow.
that I learned about. And they were in a housing project just a few blocks from where I lived. And I found out that that's where they were from. And I knew people over there. We were actually over there a lot, because there was a game room where we used to play music at. And they used to come to the game room. And so I found out through listening, people talking, that these are the same names that I was seeing on the trains. And so, you know, I kind of got cool with Cito, because he was kind of the leader of that MOG crew.
Yeah.
And Cito, he took me into the building that he lived in, and we took the elevator up to the very top floor,
mm-hmm.
and we went to the stairwell. And when I tell you, when you open the door to the stairwell, when I tell you, the entire walls, ceiling were completely covered with pieces. It was like walking into a painting. It was amazing. Like,
wow.
I couldn't, and that was like from like the top floor down. It went down like three or four flights, just full colorful. I was just like, wow. Like, I'm looking around, like the ceiling, everything is pieced and colors and characters. Yeah. It was just, it blew my mind. And I wish I had camera back then. All they had was disposable cameras. I didn't own a camera. But I wish I had a camera, man, because there was so much. And that just opened my mind up to this world. And these, I was like, these guys are the real deal. Like, they're out here, and that's where they would practice. They would practice their colors and their letters. They would practice in the stairwells, which is crazy, because like there's no ventilation at all. So I don't know how they were painting like this in the stairwell, but man, they were doing it and never got, obviously there was no repercussions, because you could tell that they were there constantly writing on these in the hallways and doing full color pieces.
That's crazy.
That's what really made me like, yo, I want to do this. Like, I want to see if I can do this. I want to get my hands on some paint. And I remember, racking up for the first time.
Give us tip. Where was this? Where was the first time you racked?
So my original DJ, still my great friend to this day, Steady Pace. He lived in Linden Plaza, which is another housing development in East New York, not Brownsville, but East New York.
Okay.
And his building was right above the A-train yard. So the A-train layup was literally below his building.
Yo.
So you could walk, like when I came out of his building, we would go onto this, I forgot what street it was. And you would see the train just parked down there. And right across the street from the train yard was a store called TSS. People that are from East New York, from Brownsville, they know that store. TSS was right across the street. And that was the first place that we went to rack up.
That's bonkers. And then his house was literally above the yard too.
Yeah, right above. I forgot what floor he was on. He was on like the, I don't know, it was a tall building, maybe 20-something floors. He was probably like on 15. I can't remember what floor he was on.
There's some Bermuda Triangle fake business going on there. What happened when you did your first piece? Let's get into that.
So that was, I mentioned we walked through a freight train tunnel. So this is also in East New York. Well, actually, it might have been Brownsville, borderline Brownsville, East New York. There was a freight train line that ran through the neighborhood. And so somebody, told us that was where you could, bomb a freight train or whatever. So we went over there. We had our cans with us. And there was a tunnel that the train went through. I didn't know where that tunnel went to because it was pitch black. But we decided as a group that we were going to walk through this tunnel to see where it led to. Like, we literally just, just throw caution to the wind. You got four or five young teenagers walking on the train tracks. And it was pitch black at first, but eventually your eyes get adjusted. And now you can see, where you're walking, and we can see old discarded paint cans and stuff. Wow. And we just walked. We walked until we saw light. We saw his light, and we just kept going until we got to the other side of the tunnel. And there was a wall there with a bunch of different graph on it. And I just decided to pick a spot. We knew where we were when we came on the other side. I was like, oh, we're in Bushwick. We're in a whole different neighborhood, but we're in Bushwick. But we knew where we were. So I was like, all right, cool. So I picked the wall, and my first piece was a Klein piece, C-L-E-I-N. I used light blue and yellow. It wasn't, the letters weren't really that dope, but it was my first piece. So I did my best, but it was a cool accomplishment for me.
My mind's blown. I'm talking to Master Ace right now about breath. This is like fucking mind blowing, bro. Like, people are going to be losing their shit on this. Okay. As a kid, being in that situation, very self-aware, but everything around you being senses on super heightened mode of, and you're in Bushwick, you're not even in your, like, your manor, you're alone, right, underground, coming out, big machines, a wall that you just got to pick. And then there's the embracing of, oh, I'm just going to put my paint on this.
Yeah.
Well, that must have been mind-blowing for you.
It was exciting. There was definitely a sense of danger because, we could have been hit by a train. Like, those trains were still running on those tracks. But they were slow, they were freight trains. So you could hear them coming, You know, you could see, we were always looking back to see if we saw headlights, you know, to the front of the train. So we were just really cautious. There was a lot of debris down there in the tunnel, like old discarded, like furniture and tires. And I don't know how junk even got down there like that, but it was pretty nasty down there. But we were just excited, man, to explore this tunnel and see where it led. We found that wall. I decided to do my piece that day. And I feel like there's a photo of that piece. I feel like there's a photo of that.
I'm gonna ask you afterwards.
I feel like there is, but I just don't, I can't, I know I can, if I can picture it, then I mean that it does exist, but I don't know where that might be.
Wow. Was Klein always your name for a piece? Or did that take
Klein was just, Klein was just the name that I chose for that early, the very first part of my graffiti journey. And I picked those letters because they went well together. I should have probably picked something with less letters, but I feel like I could do a good C. The L was easy. You know, I like doing the letter E because there was so much you could do with the E.
I
was obviously simple. And then I don't know why I settled on that name, but I settled on it for the first part of my graffiti journey. And that's what I was writing.
What was your throw up with Klein? Would it be an N and E or?
It was a CL.
CL, okay.
It was just a CL, yeah.
What did your name then, what did it become over time after Klein?
So what happened was I stepped away from Graph for a while because me and the aforementioned Steady Pace got caught riding by these undercover detectives riding on a store wall. And we got shook up pretty good. What happened was we were walking around looking for store gates to bomb. We found one. It's broad daylight, by the way. It's not like it was at night. It was broad daylight. We saw this gate and decided to do a quick tag or whatever with the cans.
Yeah.
As we're riding on the wall, a car comes directly at us and pulls up on the sidewalk like it's going to hit us.
What?
And these two undercover cops get out and we're caught. Like we're red-handed. Like there's no running. Like the car was up on top of us and they were out of the car so fast. There was nothing to do.
That sounds extreme.
So, you know, back in those days, cops were pretty rogue. You know, there wasn't a lot of, to answer to. So, you know, they got out and they kind of like was, you know, pushing us around a little bit, what the fuck y'all doing? You know, what's wrong with y'all? And we were just like speechless, like caught and scared to hell. And so they didn't want to deal with the paperwork of arresting two juveniles.
Yeah.
So they took the paint and one of the cops took a can of the white paint that we had. He said, hold your hands out. And we held out our palms and he spray painted our palms completely white.
What
like
fuck?
Completely covered our palms with white paint. And he said, now get the fuck out of here. And he took the cans, they got in the car and they drove off. So now, and he sprayed the top of my hat too. He sprayed our clothes, the top of my leather hat. I had a leather Kengo on. He sprayed the top of my hat and then he sprayed the palms of our hands. So now you got to understand, nobody in my family knows that I'm out here doing this stuff. So now I got to figure out how I'm going to get rid of two white palms of probably glossy white paint.
Yeah.
So I went home with my hands in my jacket. Steady Pace was like, yo, I'm done. I'm never writing again.
Because really?
We could have went to jail. And I was like, you're right. And I was feeling them, but I still had the desire. I still wanted to do it. There was still something pulling me. He never wrote again, but it was still something pulling me towards it. So I went home with my hands hidden in my pockets. I went in the bathroom and man, I must've been in there 30 minutes with soap and scrubbing and with a wash rag, trying to get that paint off. It took me a while to get it all off, but I got it off enough to where it wasn't going to be noticed at dinner. But you know, I was just hiding my hands for the next few days until I got it all the way off. But man, that was a crazy experience. And it made me kind of step away from street bombing. I was still writing in, my piece books and stuff like that, but I stepped away from the street bombing for a while because I knew I was kind of risking a lot at that point.
Well, paint was very different back then as well. Trying to get it off hands, I would imagine, is a nightmare. Let me go back a little bit to what you were saying about the rubbish being underneath the bridge at the time.
Yeah.
Because when I go back there, and this is only a few documents that I've watched and such, but there is a constant dialogue within those 80s documentaries of New York, how dilapidated it was, how underfunded it was, the crack cocaine problem, the homelessness, it was far from the machine it is now. And, you know, can you give us a picture painting, if you can, in word of what that was like and what you think, you know, what gave the surgence of graffiti its prominence at that time? What do you think it ultimately was?
I think it ultimately was young kids with no identity that wanted to be recognized, that wanted to in some way be noticed. That's what it was. It was that desire for people to see your name, whether they really knew it was you or not, you knew that it was you. So just like I tell you, I'm writing all of these names down in my school book. Those guys were putting their name up so that somebody would take notice and be like, oh yeah, I saw such and such on the train. I saw him. Even though I didn't know the person, I saw his name. And in a lot of cases, their names preceded them. I met some of those guys later on in life, but Cope 2 was probably one of the people that stood out to me the most. And when I finally met him, he actually came to my video shoot for my song Saturday Night Live. He's actually one of his pieces is actually in the video. He came to the shoot. He did his classic Cope 2 throw up. And it's in the video. And so I met him that day, and I was like really meeting somebody that was famous, at least famous to me from a graph standpoint. Like that was like a cool thing.
That's crazy. That's almost like, you know, when you're doing something right, something like that happens and you kind of meet one of your, you know, the tick box heroes of like, actually, I've got the guy on my video. That's bonkers.
Yeah. Yeah, that was a cool day.
And you must have met so many other writers in your time as a rapper, you know, and you know, superstar MC. There must have been some crazy moments where you had to pinch yourself. You know, the kid inside you's like suddenly.
Yeah,
like,
yeah. Exactly. Yeah. So after I stepped away from graph for a while, I went off to college. And once I got to college, it was a little bit easier because there's nobody writing graph on a college campus. If graph showed up, I would be one of the first culprits. So I knew I wasn't going to be writing on. So that allowed me to kind of like get it out, you know, just leave it alone, keep it out of, it wasn't out of my system, but it was a way for me to not be worried about it because I didn't see it. But right around that time, we were talking about my Slaughterhouse album and that video shoot, right before that album was out, or maybe it had just come out, I was outside of a Salt and Pepper release party. I remember this very well. And we were waiting on some other guys. We were about to go into this party. And some dudes were out there too, and one of them recognized me. And I was like, yeah, whatever. We just started, you know, small talk. And I don't know how the topic of graph came up, but he was like, yo, we right? I was like, where are y'all right? He was like, yeah. I said, man, I used to love writing. Like, you know, I said, I left it alone when I got to college. I said, and you know, one of my regrets was I never really got to like really bomb the trains or do any of that stuff. And he's like, oh yeah, we bomb, we do all that. And at this point, I'm a grown man now. I'm out of college. And so now I'm like, man, well, if y'all ever go, if y'all ever go out, like, let me know. Here's my number. Like, I'll roll with y'all because I just wanted to just try it again. And so the guy I met that day, his name is Lou 167. That's what he wrote, Louis. Louis 167. And it was a guy, one of his good friends named Rule. And they're from the Bronx. So they're from the Bronx. And he's the person who actually introduced me to Cope too. Because when I was talking about different writers, I mentioned his name. He's like, oh, I know Cope. I'll tell him to come to the video. Like, it was like literally like that. So, but those guys, Lou and Rule, and there's another guy, Trab, they took me out years later. They took me out on my first true, you know, bombing missions. And I'm on my second album at this point. So it's kind of crazy to be out doing it, but it was something that I didn't get out of my system. So I went bombing with them several nights in the Bronx as well as Brooklyn. We hit a couple of freight trains. I was still learning. I was still trying to get my letters together and all that. Like, I remember Lou helping me kind of do a piece, one of my later pieces. I needed help. You know, I left it alone for so long.
Yeah.
But those guys were instrumental in me kind of like fulfilling whatever it was that was in me that made me want to bomb and just try it again. I did it, man. And that was like 93 when I started bombing again.
So Slaughterhouse, you'd been signed. It's all popping off. And you're full of surprises, man. Right. So you're telling me you're just like, fuck it. You know what? I'm just going to go and risk the shit and just go and just do
yeah, bombing. Yeah. Yeah, and we got Chase. Whoa. We got Chase one night, right next to, it's called the Jackie Robinson Parkway now, but back then it was called the Interboro. We were riding on the side of the highway because there's some good spots, some good little highway wall parts that were real visible. So we were bombing that, and there was a police car that rolled by and made a U-turn, and so we had to just take off, and it was like literally. It went from painting to run, like a panic run. and we all took off. And I remember having to jump down. Like, we were running full speed, and then there was a drop. And I remember miscalculating my steps.
What?
And fell pretty much chest first. Luckily, I didn't hit my face, but I took a bad fall. Like,
yeah, you would have been winded, right?
I was winded and I took a bad fall. I fell right on my chest. And I remember Lou was like, you all right? And I just jumped up and kept running, and I'm all scraped up and stuff. And we got away. Obviously, we hid or whatever. We got away. And I was like, man, that was a close one right there. You know, that was close. I could have really, and I started thinking about what, you know, I got videos out. this could be bad. Like,
yo,
yeah, this could be bad. So I was like, you know what, maybe I need to chill. Because then they were telling me about the Vandal Squad in New York, and from what I understand, the Vandal Squad, a lot of those guys were undercover.
Yeah,
they were graph writers, but they were really undercover police officers.
Damn.
And they were, you know, they were in the mix of the graph community, and they were just trying to learn who wrote what.
Wow.
And so I was like, man, I would be a good prize for that police officer if I get caught. So I need to really chill, because if they're out here like learning who people are and putting faces with names, with the graph names, I'm going to get caught. So that also made me chill.
Let's go back to the more uncomfortable feelings and conversation of when you were told about the Vandal Squad, the Graffiti Squad that New York had kind of put in place, and that was like a revelationary thing directly after you'd fallen on your chest and you'd done, you know, you'd scratched the itch.
Yeah.
Then suddenly a perspective kicks in of like, oh, hold on a minute, I'm on a major label here. Hang on, what am I doing?
Yeah.
That must have sent the EBGBs into you for months, no?
Yeah, yeah. I just said, listen, I got to stop.
Yeah.
Like, I have to stop because the more known I get, the more of a chance of me getting caught, because, you know, the graph writers, they're talking, yo, you know, Master Ace writes, right? Oh, yeah, well, he write. At that point, I was writing ASE, so it was going to be an easy catch, yeah, you know, for me. And so I just said, let me stop before I get got. So I just, I decided to just, you know, stop. I mean, I still did stuff outside of the country because I did go bombing in Berlin, Germany. I mean, not Berlin, Germany, sorry, Cologne, Germany. I met a guy named DJ Schneider, who I'm still friends with to this day, but we met all the way back in 2000 or 2001. And I was telling him my bombing stories, and he's like, oh man, we write, you want to go write? And I was like, and I'm going to go bombing in Germany. Okay. and they took me out. They took me out in, you know, it was the night I had a show that night.
Yeah.
So I probably got off the stage 2 a.m., something like that. And we went out like 3 a.m. and were bombing a highway in Cologne, Germany. And the police came.
What?
And the police came, and we had to run and hide in the bushes.
Oh,
and I got a can of silver in my coat pocket, right?
Yeah.
And we're crouched down, bending over, hiding from the police. I don't know it at the time, but while I'm bent over, the cap to the silver is pressed down, and it's just spraying all the paint is coming out of the can inside my jacket.
Oh shit!
And it went all the way through all my clothes to my skin.
What? So
when the police finally left, I stand up and I got this giant silver stain on my hoodie, on my t-shirt, and on my skin.
Tour.
Yeah, this is while I'm on tour, right? And I was like, man, like, what am I doing? Like, if I get arrested for graft in Germany, that's not going to be good.
Yeah,
I don't even know what the laws are out here. That could be like 10 years in jail. I don't know what's going on. Like, I'm bugging right now. So that was another one of those incidents saying, Ace, relax, like, chill. Like, if it's not a permission wall, you don't need to be out there bombing. So that incident happened, and from what DJ Schneider tells me, well, he told me this like maybe 5 years ago. He's like, yo, your tag is still up. Like, nobody went over it. Like, what? It's like, wow. Yeah, it's still there. That happened, and that was 2001, and he said it's still up. Like, 5 years ago, he told me it was still up.
Wow.
So I don't know if it's still up right now, but that would be crazy.
I mean, we kind of alluded to this at the beginning of the podcast before we started, to be fair, guys. You know, I think you and me orbited a particular time with the same agent, and we were kind of, I think we might have even been on the same billing here and there. When you're in Berlin, there is a feeling of a more leniency, a less, you know, more tolerance to that sort of activity. And because of the lawlessness, you know, we're so used to particular protocol in our own countries. When you go over there, and it's almost like, well, actually, what I don't know ain't going to hurt me. Let's just go. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I have to say, Ace, I was taking a punt when I hit you up, bro. And I swear to God, I had no idea that there was these. What's with the itch? What is the itch of graph? What makes people, what makes the likes of us want to do it and then think later? What is that?
Well, for me, I think I'm an artist at heart. So creating is always going to be exciting and something that I want to do, whether it's however it is artistically or whatever. But I think the thing that made me keep coming back to it is because I didn't feel like I wanted to reach a point where I'm like, yeah, I'm pretty good. Like, I wanted to get to that point where I could say, look at what I did on the wall and go, yo, that's pretty dope. I'm good. And so I was chasing that, like, from those early days when me and Steady Pace got caught and got our hands painted, I was still learning. I never got really good at that point. I didn't get good yet. And so, you know, me and Lou 167 and Rule back in 93, whenever it was.
Big writers, man. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, meeting them and then going out with them, seeing what their ability was and saying, oh, wow, that's the level I got to try and get to. All I was trying to do was get to a point where I could put something up and be like, that's dope. And, you know, I was trying to get there. That was what I was chasing.
It's habitual, isn't it? And
yeah.
Oh man, isn't it a dream though? You know, that when you touch down in another country, it's like that extra bit of fun activity, that kind of nice warm feeling of, you know, you versus a wall, that zen of not thinking for a couple of hours, but being in another country doing it. That's kind of, that's a pretty strong catalyst, isn't it?
No, it is. It is. You just got to, I just realized that it has to be something that is a permission situation and not where I'm trying to break the law. Mm-hmm. Like I got over that, you know, that adrenaline rush of, oh, we're doing something dangerous and against the law and let's go mm-hmm. for it. Like, as I got older and matured, I was like, that's not the move because, you know, I have a family that I have to take care of and I can't be getting locked up for this. It just doesn't make sense. So I just had to be smarter about my moves.
Yeah, I feel you. The world of hip hop, again, just, you know, just going back to very briefly, the world of hip hop, it's an inclusive sport, isn't it? It's, you know, you can't just sit there and watch on the sidelines. You've got to be a part of it, whether you're a DJ or MC, B-boy, beatboxer. You know, you've just got to put your hat down in the ring and you go for the jugular. It ain't no sitting down business. There's other contemporaries of your generation. And a little bit further out, you know, you've got your Artifacts, you've got MF Doom, rest in peace. So I believe you worked alongside, of course. And then you've got your KRS-Ones and your Joey Cracks and, these characters, man. Like, do you ever get into conversations with these guys when you meet up with them about Graf?
I've talked to KRS before because he saw a piece somewhere in Europe and he's like, yo, I saw you up out in, I think it was Switzerland or something.
What?
And I, you know, but those were like permission walls. Those, I mean, it was cool. I was able to write without, you know, getting in trouble. But yeah, he just the acknowledgement of, you know, somebody else out here that's doing records and also writing Graf, you know?
Yeah, but I got to tell you, I ain't ever heard stories like what you've just said come out of them. Like, you know, I mean, I am yet to be talking to them on podcast, but I'm telling you now, like that.
Everybody's got stories. I promise you they got stories.
Really?
I promise you they all have stories.
Yeah, we need these stories documented, bro. Like, this is some stuff that I don't think people would ever comprehend coming out of my stories. This is my fucking crazy.
Hey, man. Hey, you know, it's part of my story. It's part of my journey.
And it's funny, isn't it? Because, you know, looking at the Slaughterhouse cover and taking that picture as the reference point to what actually becomes this conversation now, do you think that was actually the intention at the time of taking that? It's almost like it's a salute. It's a, yeah, I've dabbled. I've done it. I wouldn't call myself. It's not my career. But do you think that was part of the thing? It was almost like a calling out of like, yeah, and I do this too.
Yeah, it was that, and it was to acknowledge the other, the often forgotten element of hip hop that most people don't talk about, because it was kind of a dirty secret in New York, because they made it against the law to the point where people had to hide that the fact that they were doing it, hide their identities or whatever. But, you know, I just, it was a way for me to big up those cats that went out there and risked it every night. You know, there's a song on Slaughterhouse called Mad Ones. And I have a line on that song where I say, yeah, I rock like your grandma's chair. Peace to graffiti writers everywhere. So it was just a way for me to send a little tip of the hat to those artists out there that are risking it all just to get their names up and to get that street fame.
Yeah, bro, that whole Slaughterhouse album was so seminal in my mind. What was the tune that was like freestyled? It was like live. So it was like the B-side of the tape. What was that called?
It was just an interlude. I don't think it was a title.
That,
it was just me.
That alone changed my whole... It was almost like you'd scooped up a where I wanted to be at 15. I just put it on the record and I'm like, yo, I want that right now.
Like, no, that was a Big Daddy Kane release party.
Was it? Wow.
Yeah. It was a release party. And there was a lot of notable rappers that got on the stage that night. From from Greg Nice to Just Ice to Lakim Shabazz to Biz Markie to Jay-Z to Ill was up there.
They aren't sung loud enough. Ill and Al Scratch. I used to love their stuff, man.
Yeah. Ill rapped on there too. So there was, I dug it up recently. My boy sent it to me, and it was, I think there was 12 of us, or 9 of us that rapped.
Wow.
Yeah, I got the list. Somebody sent me the list recently. My DJ, Mr. C, sent me the list because he's the one who recorded it. So he has the original recording of that night. He just gave me that piece so I could use it as an interlude for my album.
That's crazy. That's got to be out there online somewhere, that live thing. It must be. Mr. C, come on.
It might be. It might be on YouTube or something like that.
To a young man like me at the time, and to see and hear you drop lyrics like that, see the picture, then that live environment, I mean, it had it all in a package for its time. And rest in peace to Biz Markie, of course.
Definitely.
Oh my God, you know, I mean, the beatboxing, he was my inspiration, you know. And I think your DNA, you being able to drop that in a 92, 93 era? Ooh, around that. You know, to have Graf recognized at that point, there wasn't many people doing it like that, Ace. You know what I mean?
Right. There wasn't. It was important to me, though, because it was part of who I was.
Yeah. Well, we very much value you passing through, my brother. Any shout-outs you want to give? Any props from over here you want to give up?
No, just check out my website, masterace.com. I got all my merch up there, T-shirts, hats, socks, you know, vinyl, CDs. Bunch of different cool items on their hoodies. Mm-hmm. And follow me on IG, Master Ace Picks, PICS. Follow mm-hmm. me on Twitter, Master Ace. The Facebook is Master Ace Official. And look for the new album with me and Marco Polo coming soon.
Woo! There's the heaters. You've been warned. Master Ace, thank you so much, my brother. Thank you for sharing the stories, man.
Absolutely. Appreciate it.
My guy. Killer Keller Podcast. Alain was out of fashion. You know it is. Caring, sharing. You're all one and the same over here, all right? Don't talk to anyone I wouldn't. You stay lucky, people, all right? Peace.